Astonishing Legends Network.
All right, so ladies and gentlemen, we're here with Scott Philbrick, as you know, and we're talking about the Light in the Dark Tour 2026. Now, what you might be thinking is, wait, didn't you do the Light in the Dark Tour last year? Well, yes, I did, but I didn't go to every city on Earth. I went to like three places.
Yes.
So now I'm going to new places, new cities, and so I will be doing the same secret show. It'll be an episode. It's just an episode I've never recorded, never will record. It's the live episode. And so if you want to hear it, you go to the live show. That makes sense, right?
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I think the scariest part is that there hasn't been a light in the dark for almost a year. So people have really been left out in the cold.
That's right. The light's coming back. As summer ends and we get into the fall season, the light in the dark comes back. So yeah.
Yes.
So Scott, here's what we're going to do on the show that we're doing right now. You'll ask me questions from your heart about what's coming up in the tour, and then I'll tell you because of course I wake up in the middle of the night screaming thinking about it.
So let's talk about that. So last year it was a lot of East Coast stuff. You're moving to a different part of the country this time, right?
Yeah, we're doing Midwest this time because here's the thing. And I don't know if you know what you're like. Do you know what your top 10 cities in America are in terms of listenership?
I haven't looked in a while. I mean, of course, LA and New York are on there, and I think Chicago is too, but I'm not sure like where the next seven or eight are.
Okay. Mine are very consistently, because I'll look for the total for like every single episode we've ever done, the full numbers.
Yeah.
And then I'll just look like episode by episode on a given day. And it's pretty consistent. LA is number one. Mm-hmm. Then Chicago's number two. And I don't know why.
Right.
But I've got a ton of listeners in Chicago and I don't really know a ton of people in Chicago. So that to me is fantastic.
Yeah.
Then it's followed by Seattle and Portland.
Oh, okay.
And then the fifth one can be almost anything. Sometimes it's Texas. Sometimes it's Pittsburgh. Sometimes it's New York. New York actually weirdly is not reliably even in my top 10. So I don't know what that's about.
Oh, interesting. That's interesting. You know, the thing, when I used to look at those stats a lot, and we did a lot for the first several years, and especially the geographic ones, it always fascinated me. But there was a time where one of the partners at the company, the last place I worked in New York City, which was a commercial and music video post-production house, one of the partners there who started that company, there was only three guys, had left the business, and he and his wife, they had a loft down below, well, I'm not going to say the street because I'm going to say who bought it, but they had a loft in Lower Manhattan that they sold to Emily Blunt and John Krasinski. And then he sold out his piece of the partnership and they bought a sailboat and went to sail around, literally around the world, which he was certified to do. This guy was hardcore. I mean, and I'm talking, you know, and the boat's like 40 some feet, whatever, but he was listening. They were listening to the show because we had just kind of started it and everything. And I used to go and there would be one listener like at Easter Island and I knew it was him. And because he would have a satellite link or whatever, and I could almost track where they were as they were going around the world by the one person listening in like some tiny island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, which was pretty cool.
That's amazing that Audio Boom, I guess it's Audio Boom that knows where it is.
I don't know how it works. Yeah, I don't know how, I was surprised too, but like, you know, and this was a while back. We're going on 13 years now, I think. So this was probably in like our second year or third year, but like, because they finished and then they sold the boat and now they live in a place that looks like an AI postcard.
It is fascinating because like sometimes I'll just like look on a particular day and I'll go way down and go, oh, someone listened to like an episode from 2 years ago. There's like one person. And then you'll look, you can actually find the city and it'll be like some city I've never heard of in the middle of Kansas. Yeah. And I'm like, well, who is that person? And why did they listen today to that episode? And then I'll like look around to see if I can find if that city has ever listened to any other thing. And sometimes right. I can't. And I'm like, that's so weird. How
you
did
didn't hook them. You didn't hook them. They got that. They get that one time and you didn't. So you here's, yeah. So I'll tell one other and then we'll get back on point with my next question. But like the, one of the high up people at Audio Boom is a very close friend of mine. His name is Brendan. He lives in New Jersey, in Montclair, New Jersey, which is where a lot of New Yorkers live because it's not hard to get back and forth from the city from there. But if you want to have a house or whatever. And he was out walking or jogging or something like two blocks from his house. And he's across a lot of podcasts. He's a liaison for, you know, hundreds maybe and talks to different people or whatever. And he was like jogging and he heard me and Forrest talking. And he was like, what the, and he couldn't tell where it was coming from. So he's like, he turns back around on the sidewalk and he goes back to this house. There's a garden with tomatoes in it and there's speakers and they're playing Astonishing Legends for the tomatoes.
Oh, they're playing it for the tomatoes. Oh my God.
Yeah. So I was like, that's pretty great. And he was like, anyone else going by there wouldn't have even known you guys or what that was. But he was like, I thought I heard you talking to me. As I was running in my neighborhood. So
that is so weird. I'm still waiting for someone like, you know, in a restaurant or, you know, at a coffee place to go, God, your voice is really familiar to me.
Yeah.
And it has not happened.
I got recognized
so far
in the Lego store. So recognized
that's right.
Visually in a Lego store. And it was at Topanga Mall like a billion years ago. Only time I've ever been recognized in person.
I thought you, weren't you recognized verbally once? Like someone recognized your voice, I thought?
No, I don't think that's happened. But this person in the Lego store knew who I was on site, which I still don't remember how that happened. And that mall's monstrous. I mean, you know, it's a, like huge, giant. And we just happened to be in there, my whole family. And somebody was like, aren't you Scott Philbrook? I was like, are you kidding me?
The recognition thing is weird. Rainn Wilson was talking about how like he was somewhere in a drugstore in the middle of nowhere during COVID in a full mask, like just, and totally dressed down, you know?
Yeah.
And it wasn't even talking. And someone's like, Dwight? He's like, how?
That's great. That's great. I've like, and I read something just yesterday about Marilyn Monroe. And I can't remember. She was walking with a friend, a female, an actress. They were both walking on the street in New York and she was dressed super down and no one was paying attention to her. And I mean, this could be apocryphal. I did not, to be clear, I didn't source this. I just, you know, it was a Twitter thing or Reddit or something. But she just, it's a quote from this actress, and I can't remember the other actress's name. It was on, well, not somebody who was super familiar to me, but she was like, I was walking with her, and she goes, do you want me to see me become her? And she goes, what do you mean? She goes, watch. And then she said all her, just her body language changed and some, whatever it was. And then cars started like honking and pulling over and people were like moving aside and staring at her. She just like turned it off.
That's incredible.
So that's what I do. When I'm in the Lego store, I turn it off. I try to turn it off now. I don't want people to like gawk. So.
Right. Well, Scott, you know, there is no off switch.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I can't turn it off.
I do know that about you. I do know that. So, well, let me ask you this. One thing that when you told me about this new tour that surprised me was how relentless it is. You are night after night after night after night. How on earth do you expect to pull that off? What I mean, who are you? Like, you do you have a road crew or what?
No, I have Susan, and it's going to be awful.
Yeah. She is amazing. Already, though. She's worth three people.
My God, at least. And that's what I'm trying to get out in front of it. And so I keep saying, I have pre-apologized for this tour so many times.
You got to stop doing that. People are lucky you're coming around.
I'm pre-apologizing to her. I'm just
to her. Okay. I was going to say,
here's the thing. The performance is going to be great. I could go on and do this 365 nights a year. I wish I could, but Susan's like, you know, we've got to get into the location. We've got to figure it out. We've got to figure out sound.
Are you driving between all these or flying?
So here's how it's
going to
work. Yeah. So the first
one. What are the
one,
cities? First, tell everybody the cities. Yeah.
Okay. The cities are in order. Toronto, Canada. Minneapolis, Minnesota. Chicago, Illinois. I don't know why I'm saying this state. There's really only one Chicago. I'm not doing Chicago.
No, but remember that one guy in Mozambique, you might not know.
Doesn't know. Yeah. So it's for Chicago, Illinois, followed by Cleveland, Ohio, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and then two nights later will be Mothman Festival Saturday night. West Virginia, Point Pleasant.
Okay.
So yeah. Those, but it literally is starting that Sunday night. Sunday is Toronto, and then it just goes boom, boom, boom every single night in a different city. We're not even doing like two
I feel like
nights.
Isn't there one day that you have off, like right before Mothman or something?
Yeah, right before Mothman.
As the person exactly. who was doing your dates on your website for you,
yes,
I seem to remember, oh, there's a gap.
Yeah, that's the gap. Yeah, but by the time we make it to Mothman, I mean, in a weird way for me, well, I mean, there's, you know, you have to set up your booth at the Mothman Festival, but that's okay.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
No, it's going to be crazy. We're flying in to Toronto on Saturday, then doing a show on Sunday. But then the next morning, flying to Minneapolis, doing a show that night. Next day, flying to Chicago, doing a show that night, then driving to Cleveland. The next day, doing a show that night, drive to Pittsburgh. Now, those are, you know, 2-3 hour drives, you know.
Yeah.
But still, every single day, we're getting
up, a lot.
Checking out of a motel, driving, getting to the place, checking the place, checking into a motel, getting cleaned up, going to do the show. Yeah.
You're taking into account road construction, detours, flat tires.
Nope. Okay. Nope. None of that. We're not taking into account a goddamn thing. We're plowing through. If it doesn't work out, sorry.
That's so rock and roll, man. That's like super rock and roll.
Well, I mean, when I'm sitting comfortably in my office making the plan, I'm like, why pay for a night in a hotel where I'm not doing a show?
Yeah.
Why do it? And I'm just looking at myself and my ability to, it's like, every night I want to do something. And that's what I want to do.
If this was Europe, though, you could just couch surf on this. You wouldn't even need a hotel if you were in Europe. I mean, that would be the European way of doing it.
Well, theoretically, I could do it here. I mean, I could, if I was that guy, I would say to the audience, hey, if there's anybody in Chicago, you know, you got a spare room, you know, for me and Susan, we're going to show up. And there'd be people who would offer that. I don't want that. That is very kind. Yeah. I'm sure people would do that. I want a anonymous Marriott room.
Right.
Go into, you know, take a shower.
You need to decompress.
I need to decompress.
Yeah, so how do you prepare your content for this? Is this like, is it just an episode of your show, or is it a special roadshow kind of thing? Or what is your preparation for it?
It's a special episode. Well, what I did was a year and a half ago, I was 2 or 3 episodes ahead in writing. And that's when I realized, oh, wait, we're going to do a tour, which means I have to pull one of these out. So one season, instead of writing 10 episodes, I ended up writing 11. And the additional one was but I didn't know which one it was going to be. So I had 2 or 3, and I'm like, Susan, why don't you read these and let me know which you think would be best to do in front of a live audience. And so she read them and she chose one. And I'm like, great, fine. I didn't give it a second thought. Set it aside, didn't record it. Then when it was time a year ago, right around now, to do it, she's like, we should do a rehearsal. So why don't you set up and just sort of, and I'm reading it, by the way. I've not memorized it. I am reading it. I'm looking up from the page, you know, every 20 minutes or so. But
You took a public speaking class.
I took a public speaking. I'm reading it, you know, and it seems to work. But anyway.
Yes. It was good last year.
Well, yeah, you saw it. That's right. You were in were in Washington, D.C. Yeah.
Yes.
It has so much to do with Susan. It's a big Susan episode. And about 10 minutes in, she's like, what is this? I'm like, this is the one you chose. You said I could do this. And she's like, I never said, I would never in a million. I'm like, honey, you said it was okay. And it's about a relationship. It gets super personal, you know? I mean, it's a great episode, and the book is really interesting too, but it's a secret. And so she's like, okay, but now the weird thing is we're doing it and she's there. So the audience is like listening to this, and then they're like able to like look over at her.
You know what's weird? I've been in this position before almost a worse fashion, I would say, not to one up you, but my wife being a comedy writer, I would go in support of her when she was doing sketches at the Groundlings, and many of them were about foolish things that I had done. And people who knew her and knew us would look in the audience and know that the character in the sketch was based on me.
Oh, okay, but the character, but she wasn't saying my husband Scott Philbrook and pointing to you in the audience. Okay.
No. So yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, but it was obvious enough. I mean, it's a 99 seat theater.
That's true. I know. Well, here's the great thing, though. The audience is so great, and they will come up, and they come up after the show, and they go to Susan, and they go,
"Yeah,
you are my favorite character."
That's yeah. It's like the Truman Show. She's like, "Wait a minute."
She's like, "Thank you." So that's what it is. So it's there's a book and there's a story. And so that's what it will be. But here's the interesting thing, because they're all new cities, I'll be doing the same thing that I did in New York and Washington. The only city I'm doing twice is Point Pleasant, West Virginia.
Right.
So for that one, I am doing a different one.
Right. So gotcha.
That one, if you were at the Mothman Festival last year and you saw me in the evening do my performance, it will be a different show this time. It'll be a different one. Okay.
So cool.
And it'll be one specially chosen for the Mothman Festival, but it will.
Excellent.
But anyway, yeah. So that's how it's going to work. Almost more of a vacation, went to New York last week, and Susan had a little bit of business to conduct, but it was mostly, we had a lot of time off. Mm-hmm. And so I was imagining in my mind, okay, what if every morning I'm waking up here in the same hotel, we had to go drive to a new hotel and another day and another day and another day. And I'm like, Susan, I am so sorry. This is going to be a death march for you. Yeah. For me, it'll be a lot of attention. People.
Yes. Right.
You know,
the benevolent narcissist at play.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. No, it's going to be great. I'm going to love it. I'm going to be like, after every show, I'm going to be, let's go party. And she's like, no, I have to pack up the merch.
Yeah.
And we will have merch, ladies and gentlemen. Let me tell you, we will have merch.
A lot of you have reached out asking for help with your personal creative projects. Maybe you're writing a TV pilot or a movie. Maybe you're trying your hand at memoir. You want to tell the story of your life, kind of like this podcast. Or maybe it's a novel or a short story or a graphic novel. Whatever it is, go to richardhaddam.com and click on Richard Haddam's Writer's Room. I can read what you've got so far, help you bring it to the finish line. Or I can read a finished script or a story and help you get it into professional shape so you can finally send it out into the world. Go to richardhaddam.com, click on Richard Haddam's Writer's Room, and let's get to work. Mention that you heard about it on Richard Haddam's Paranormal Bookshelf, and you'll instantly get a 20% discount, okay? Working with me isn't free, it's not even cheap, but it's worth it. Don't wait any longer. Now's the time to make your dreams come true. Get unstuck at Richard Haddam's Writer's Room at richardhaddam.com.
So that's another fun thing to travel with, is a big box of shirts or whatever. So
yeah, there's going to be one suitcase that is just shirts and mugs and scripts.
Yeah.
And then we're having the Mothman merch sent to West Virginia.
Oh, good.
And it'll arrive at the Mothman Museum. And then Jeff Walmsley, the guy who runs the whole thing, he receives it. Yes. And then when we get there, he's like, okay, those are the boxes. Get them out of my museum. And then we take them outside and set them up at the booth. And then we sell the specific bespoke Mothman merch at the Mothman Festival. So
nice.
So that's how it works. But the I will say this, the locations that we're at this year, at each city, mostly bars.
Mm-hmm.
Those bars definitely serve, beer and wine at the minimum. Most of them sell all kinds of cocktails. And a lot of these places, like in Toronto, the Stormcrow Manor, it's full menu.
Haunted.
You can get anything.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say haunted.
Okay. So here's the thing. Okay. Stormcrow Manor, as far as I know, is not haunted, but the location is designed as if it was designed by a 9-year-old who watched a little too much Scooby-Doo.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
It's fantastic.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. That sounds great.
Yeah.
That sounds great. It's
a lot of gargoyles, a lot of dry ice, and little neon ice cubes and drinks. And
okay. What about the other locations? What are the other ones?
Well, that one. Okay. So as far as I know, Stormcrow Manor is not haunted. Padraig's Brewery in Minneapolis, as far as I know, is not haunted. But the Red Lion Pub in Chicago is most definitely haunted.
Okay.
And Colin, the proprietor, has agreed to join us after I do my show. He's going to come out and we're going to sit down and he's going to explain not only the haunted history of the Red Lion Pub, but his many, many encounters with the spirit.
Oh, that's awesome. That sounds fun.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So we'll get all that. And then of course the entire town of Point Pleasant is haunted. So.
Yes. As it were. And cursed by Chief Cornstalk. So.
That's right. You've been there, right? Oh, you know, you have been there. I remember
yes.
you telling me.
I have been. I have, believe it or not been to the festival. I've been to Point Pleasant twice, but it was not during the festival, which I think has its ups and downs. It's very cool to go there when it's not overwhelmed with people, but being at the festival is amazing too. So, you know, I think it's a very cool town. I really love visiting it. And I love Chicago too. I used to go there when I was editing TV commercials. I would go there to edit every now and then. I loved it. It was a really cool town.
I haven't really ever been there. I mean, I've been sort of near there. And then I think one night, you know, and this was going back, you know, 40 years, I had one night on the town in Chicago that I talk about in one of my episodes. But it's other than that, it's like kind of a brand new city for me. So,
yeah, that's fun. That's cool.
And it's also the home of the TV show Kolchak the Night Stalker.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. And the home of the Bob Newhart show.
Yes. Yes. God rest his soul.
So for me, it will be like, and then when I go to Minneapolis, that's the home of the Mary Tyler Moore show. So I do plan to stand in the middle of an intersection and throw my hat.
Throw your hat. And hey, maybe you can, maybe you can get an EVP from Bob. You know, his whole shtick was telephone stuff. So, you know, that can't be what could be perfect. You know, get an EVP from Bob. I have, you know, I collect vinyl, very small collection, but I like really weird esoteric stuff. And I bought a couple of Newhart comedy albums in a record store in down in Wilmington, North Carolina,
a year ago.
One of them, I think to date, is still the highest selling comedy album in history. Which is fascinating. I would not have thought, I mean, Newhart's hilarious, but it's like that, that's pretty amazing.
Well, you know, the story behind the first album he did was he had been writing comedy and recording these little bits and sending them around trying to get work. And one of the places he sent it, I believe was the record company. And they got so excited about it. They said, we want you to record this. We want to release a comedy album.
Yeah.
And he had to tell them he had never done it on stage.
Right.
It was only in his
house. That's amazing.
So they're like, okay, we'll get you a place. So they got a place. They set it up really quick, a nightclub. He'd never been on stage before. And the first time he was on was recording his first comedy album, which became the biggest comedy album of all time.
Like he had the phone on the stool or whatever. And just like
hearing one side of a phone call.
You can tell me this, whether this is true or not, because you're a screen and television writer. But I took a class in undergrad in screenwriting. And the professor was just like, don't write a phone conversation. It's lazy. Don't do a phone conversation, whatever. Like it was like verboten or whatever. And that's Bob's whole thing. That was his whole thing. That's what launched him.
So that's what you're used to. Yeah. Look, there are screenwriting rules. The phone call, you know, whatever. You can do that because you can cut between two people on a phone.
Yeah.
And it's just a scene. Who cares?
Yeah.
Here's what I don't like. If you take a class from me, here's what I will discourage.
Yeah.
I don't like the photograph on the disc.
Oh, okay.
Or the
photo, right.
Or the framed picture on the wall that the camera pans past. I'm like, I don't know what I'm looking at. Is that supposed to be the character at age 12 with their dead dad? And I'm supposed to infer a whole relationship here.
And it's bad Photoshop 8 out of 10 times.
Right. I have no idea what I'm looking at. Or even worse, is the person looking at the picture. And then we're looking back at them and they're looking sad but happy. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
I don't do that. You don't know. No one gets to do that. So that's.
Yeah. There you go.
Bob Newhart gets to do a phone call.
Yes, he does get to do a phone call. Yeah.
Anyway,
check it out, folks. You probably never heard of him because it's because we're old.
just do yourself a favor. Just go listen to Bob Newhart. It's on YouTube.
Yeah. And also one of the greatest finales of all time on the on that.
Oh, on the Newhart show. Yeah, because
on the Newhart show. Yeah, the second Newhart show. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one where they like he's like I imagined all this stuff and oh that's right it was the end of the second one.
Yeah.
The end of the second one. It was that the second one had all been a dream and he was still living in the first world. Yeah,
exactly.
That's what it was.
He woke up.
It's pretty great. It's pretty meta paranormal in a lot of ways. Yeah.
That was meta back before there were computers. That's what you could, it was like, oh my God, something. Well, I remember reading The Dead Zone like in 1981 and a character in The Dead Zone says, Oh my God, you're just like that girl Carrie from that movie. And I read in the book and I'm like, wait a second, Stephen King wrote Carrie. He's referring to himself because the movie was famous. This is insane.
Yeah, there you go. I love
it. Anyway, so Chicago, I'm excited about all the cities because I've never been to Minneapolis. I don't know what's going on there. Cleveland, I'm excited about. I would say my Minneapolis and my Cleveland fans pick up the phone and make your order. I guess you're not ordering by phone. Make your order, okay? I want to meet you guys. Minneapolis is huge for me. Cleveland is too. So if you're on the fence, go for it. There's going to be some people at each one that are just like fun guests that have been on my show before who are planning on showing up, and they're just going to be in the crowd. So.
That's gonna be great.
Yeah.
And then, so how does this fit in with your current show schedule and your seasons?
Well, it actually works perfectly because we're just finishing season 4, which just finished up. And then there'll be bonus episodes now, that will go every 2 weeks, normal schedule all the way through the end of the year. And then season 5 will start in January and, it'll be a, new, traditional episode starting then. So.
Excellent.
And then when do you go back? You go back onto your normal schedule.
We're running at the end of our summer schedule right now. We've been weekly on the Dead Letter Office, but our main show has only been one a month for June, July, and August. So we're about to go back to at least 2 a month, many times 3 a month here from now until next summer.
How's that been? Does it feel like you've had time off or does it just feel like?
It does. I mean, the Dead Letter Office being weekly, that's a lot of work. But we do have an ability to record a bunch of them at once, kind of like they do game shows. So we'll take a week or two and just go at it really hard. And then we'll get like 20 of those canned, and that gives us a little bit of a break. So the summer was nice to ad sales are slow in the summer too, which, puts a dent in the revenue. So it's nice to take a little time off. And also my son will be off to college in another year or two. So I'm trying to enjoy the summers with him while I still can. So it's another reason to take a little break. And also for our freaking sanity, because we work very hard. We produce 78 shows a year, even with that break. So it's a lot.
Well, the Dead Letter Office is cool. I mean, obviously all the, the traditional show and the Dead Letter Office, but the Dead Letter Office is great because I listen to it on my drive to UCLA.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So in the fall, when classes start up again, usually I do the fall and then I do the winter. Every Wednesday, I drive there and I drive back. And because they're slightly shorter, they're like, they're less than an hour usually.
Yes, yeah.
The DLO. It's perfect for the drive out there. And I get to hang out with you guys.
Oh, that's nice.
I get to hear some horrifying thing that's going on with one of your listeners.
Yep. It's yeah.
Are you
it's
still a lot getting? I mean, are people still writing in? Going?
Yeah, we're still getting letters. I'm not sure in the frequency. Like, I have to check, but like, we're still getting letters. I mean, that's the other thing about doing it weekly. You know, that means our first 2 years of it will be 110 stories shared. So we might step it back down to like just our dark weeks or like biweekly in the third season or whatever, so that it's like main show, dead letter, or something like that. But it's, they're a lot of fun to record. We like recording them. So it's fun to do the research on them. And a lot of times we find things connected to whatever the person's experiencing through research that's fun to like make, you know, get a bigger picture on it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, you guys have a broader view. But so it's not a thing where listeners are now going, ooh, they're making whole episodes about listener letters. I'd better write in now.
No, that is happening. That's definitely
happening. Oh, it is happening. Okay, good.
Yeah. Those are definitely coming in. I'm not exactly sure how many come in a week, but they definitely come in. Yeah.
So you're getting my letters.
Yeah. 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 We're getting your letters.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I
want to be featured somehow.
Hey, you guys, I am thrilled to tell you that the International Association of Near-Death Studies is hosting their biggest conference ever in Bellevue, Washington, at the Bellevue Hyatt Regency this summer, August 26th to 30th, and you're invited. This event is open to the public. We can go. And the theme this year is Expanded Lives, Exploring the Impact of Near-Death and Related Experiences. You're going to meet regular people who have had NDEs, and you're going to be able to talk to them and find out exactly what happened to them. They're going to have guest speakers like Dr. Eben Alexander, author of the best-selling book Proof of Heaven, Betty Eady, author of the best-selling book Embraced by the Light, and Anita Murjani, author of Dying to Be Me. She has one of the most amazing near-death experience stories I've ever heard. There's even going to be a screening of a new movie, a documentary, about NDE researcher Kenneth Ring, who wrote the book The Omega Project. He's a total legend. Here's what you have to do. Go to IANDS.org. That's IANDS.org. Click through to events, register, and get an early bird discount. That's IANDS.org. Look, there's going to be an exhibit hall. There's going to be a bookstore. You heard me, a bookstore. There's even going to be parties. Have you ever partied with this crowd? It's unreal. Guys, they've had a near-death experience. They're next level. They've died and come back. They have no fear. I guarantee you cannot keep up with these guys. Go to IANDS.org, that's IANDS.org, and get your early bird tickets for the International Association of Near-Death Studies annual conference this August 26th through 30th in beautiful Bellevue, Washington. It's going to be like you died and went to heaven. See what I did there?
So anyway, yes. Yeah, so that is what's coming up. Obviously, you can get tickets to any of the shows on the tour at Eventbrite, except for Cleveland. Cleveland, you got to go to Ticketweb. That's the only one that's different. You go to a different service, but everywhere else, just go to Eventbrite or go to Richard Haddam's ParanormalBookshelf.com and click on the events. You will see the page that Scott made, and you can buy your tickets right there.
Yes, and the event page links, all the ones that are supposed to go to Eventbrite do, and then the other one goes to Ticketweb, so you don't even have to think about it. If you go to your website, it'll just take you to the right place for that that particular venue that you want. Yeah.
Yeah. So now what about you guys? When are you going to, you and Forrest do the big 50-state?
It's funny you should mention that. We don't have a 50-state tour planned, but we are going to Wet Hot Bad Magic summer camp right around the time that you're touring. It'll be right after your tour, which is Dan and Lindsay Cummins' summer camp thing that they do in Equinunk, Pennsylvania, I believe, up near the Poconos or whatever. So we're going to be there. This is their fourth year doing that, and we're doing a live show there that is multimedia and video centric. And it is all based on evidence that we've gathered over the years from our investigations, EVPs, and, you know, File 10, of course, and then some video stuff that Forrest has gotten as well. And we're just going to be talking about the nature of that stuff and showing clips and playing audio that we've gathered over the years and talking about how it got created. So that's going to be a lot of fun. But the fun thing about this is It's our first chance to do this on a stage. And if it goes well, we may take that onto some kind of smaller tours like what you're doing in the future. So
what is that? What's the event? What is it called? The Wet Bed Summer? What is
Wet, Hot, Bad Magic.
Bad Magic. Camp. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay.
Wet, Hot, Bad Magic, which they must have been fans of the movie with Polar and them from way
the
back.
Wet Hot American Wet, Summer?
Wet Hot American Summer. Yeah, I think it's a play on that. But
is it
yeah.
Is it all paranormal stuff at this thing?
It's their shows. You know, he has Time Suck and then Lindsay has Scared to Death, I believe. And so they'll be,
right.
It's all the fans of their shows and he does stand up as well. And it's like a full blown like cabins and archery and just like all kinds of wild stuff. So
but anyone really can fun. Go to this if they want to.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can buy tickets or whatever, but yeah, it's very cool.
Okay. Are you
look up Wet Hot
right
Bad
now?
Magic?
Are you selling tickets or?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. You just
so
if you,
that's
if
where
you,
they have to. Okay, listeners go.
Yeah,
to
yeah, we're their guests. Thing. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So
okay, cool.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll be flying up for that.
Yeah, it never gets easier, does it?
That's September. I think September 13th is when our actual stage time is, but it's that weekend, like Friday through Sunday of that weekend, whatever that, the weekend of 9/11. So
that's good. That's how you remember it.
Yeah. I'm particularly glad. I'm not flying on 9/11. Thank God I'm going on the 10th and coming back on the 13th. I still have this little superstitious about that.
I know. So same thing. We're flying to Toronto on the 12th, not the 11th. And that's
yeah.
fine. Because now nothing bad can happen, but that's
yeah,
good.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, that we two great American tragedies happening 25 years apart. Okay, great.
Yeah.
So, let me just ask you this in terms of podcasting, now that you've gotten me into podcasting, are you just tired all the time?
Well, it's definitely a lot of work. It's definitely relentless. That goes back to why we try to take a lighter schedule in the summer. I mean, not only it's harder to support our machine financially in the summer because of the reduced ad sales, but it's also hard to do the show year round, or the two shows that we're now doing year round. It's difficult. So yeah, I mean, we get tired, but we still have passion for it. We get into like when we get a dead letter, or even when we do a topic on the main show. Once we get into the weeds on researching it and getting ready to talk about it, we're still there for it. So far, so good.
That's how I feel. I feel like when I'm actively writing an episode, I feel like I could do it for the rest of my life. I'm like, I can do this. I can do this. Then the minute I'm done, but before I've started the next one, I'm convinced there will never be another episode. I'm like, I got nothing. I got zero.
Yeah.
I got no book. I got no memory. I've gotten nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, Then
there's definitely a paralysis that happens every few times. In fact, yesterday I had kind of a day of just couldn't think, couldn't start anything, just like, binged some mediocre program on a streaming platform and drooled. But then this morning I was like, okay, I'm rested. I guess that's just a break my brain needed that I didn't know it needed, because there was nothing was happening until the drooling and binging, took place.
My brain needs so much of a break all the time. I don't get it. I so envy people who write every single day, and I mean, I can write every single day if I know what I'm doing. If I'm in the middle of something, I can do it because I know what it is I'm doing. But when the minute I'm not, if I'm like, I'm not really focused in on the form and function of the next thing. I mean, now, obviously it's the podcast, but before that it was like, am I writing a TV pilot? I don't know what I'm doing,
It could be, and
it's so... It's very frustrating and nerve-wracking because you want to be writing. I would be happy to be sitting in front of my computer, clickety-clacking 5 hours a day. That would be great. But I can only do it if I know what it is I'm doing. There's such a period of time where it's just like, it hasn't formed in my brain yet. So there's nothing for me to I can't even like do the vomit draft where it's just, just put down anything. It's like, I don't know what I'm doing. I can't just sit here and start from nothing.
Yeah, that's, I think that's the hardest part. My, as you know, my wife is a writer. Your careers are very similar. You guys are genre adjacent, but otherwise, like, the workload is, she's working today and has been at yesterday put in 12 hours because she was working on an episode of something and had maybe put it off for a minute and then realized it had a party scene and was introducing like 10 new characters. So she was like, it's not just an episode. It's like, oh, wait, I have to bring in people that don't exist yet in the minds of the rest of the people working on this show. So like, that's been a thing there.
Oh God.
She's exhausted.
Yeah. Oh, that's rough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
and I don't know. We have a dog who has a lot of anxiety. We're trying to help her through. She's on some medications and stuff, but she frequently, like, if the least little crack of thunder is heard in the distance or whatever, she just kind of freezes and stares in a, you know, in a different direction for like 30 seconds. No, but that's what happens to me sometimes with the show. Like, It's like the specter of the next episode is that thunder in the distance.
Yeah, where you go dead behind the eyes.
Yeah.
Our dog, I get scared anytime. You know the computer when a message comes through and that little ding?
Yeah.
Any mechanical
Pavlovian
ding sound.
Yeah.
The microwave, yeah. Anything that does that, Luna starts shaking. She runs up. She tries to jump up into my lap. We've had to reprogram the microwave to not make any noises when it's done cooking.
Yeah, we have the same thing with our dog because it's not just the doorbell. There's the ring thing, which comes through on your phone whenever somebody walks past the camera on the doorbell. Like it's a guy with a leaf blower or the mailman or whatever. And she's like, oh my God, somebody's at the door. And then there's also our garage doors have a thing that comes through on an app. And when that goes off, she's like, oh my God, somebody's at the door. It's just like, and they're all day, they're doing it. And the garage door one has another one to remind us if it's been left up accidentally. So 15 minutes later, it does it again. It's like, hey, the door's been closed 15 minutes. And she's just like, wait, what's happening? It's like, it's 20 times a day. Have you not figured this out?
No. And is that like a barking thing or a scared whining?
No, for her, it's more like she gets nervous. And sometimes it's barking, but like not, it's more mostly just like, oh God, I've got to get ready. You know?
Yeah. Kind of Luna does both. Luna will bark like crazy at somebody outside the house.
Yeah.
But if there's a ding noise, even on television, if somebody gets a text message and that sound comes on.
Yes. Yeah.
She jumps up, is scared and is like literally shaking. Oh, also, and this is weird, if someone in the house has the hiccups, freaks out.
That's pretty amazing.
We couldn't figure it out for the longest time. It's like, why is she freaking out? What is bothering her? And it's like, oh, Dashiell's got the hiccups. Anybody's got the hiccups. God. Luna is terrified. So figure that out.
Well, there you go. Yeah. That's one for the books. We'll have to do some Dr. Google, Dr. AI, and see what's the hiccup fear.
Yeah. So there you go, man. That's Light in the Dark Tour 2026. Now,
awesome.
Let me just say to the people, and believe me, Seattle, Portland, I am dying to get up there. And it's not even that hard. I really have no excuse.
Yeah, yeah.
There will be a Seattle, Portland show, probably not in 2026, but that's next on my agenda, followed by Atlanta, Charlotte. Which are also cities.
And which I'll be dropping in on at least one of those, I hope.
Well, of course. Yeah.
If you still Charlotte, like me. Yeah.
we could probably, people won't know. It's like Abbott and Costello, you know.
Right.
They can speak off stage for 40 years, but it'll be great.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that true?
No, they got along. There was one, they had one dust up because Abbott, this is the weirdest thing, but I have to share it with you. I think it was Lou Costello fired his maid and had been complaining about his maid and fired her. He was so angry. He'd been complaining to everyone on set. And then Abbott hired her immediately. And Lou became furious about this.
Oh my God.
That he hired the maid he had just fired. I think that's the way it goes. It may have been the other way, Abbott and then Costello hiring her. But right, one way or the other, one person hired the maid that the other person had been complaining about vocally and for months. And then that caused like a rift between them where they wouldn't speak off camera for like almost a year. But then it resolved itself and then they were fine. So they actually, Abbott and Costello got along fine. I know this is why you're tuning into my show.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's something I want to know. You know?
this is the stuff that I
care
about.
Talk about old. Some people are like, who and who? which is actually an on-point question right there. That's who and what?
And yeah, I don't know is the key phrase I'm talking. All right. Yeah. So there you go. Now, just so you know, guys, Scott showed up at the last tour a year ago. He showed up in Washington, D.C.
One of my favorite trips I took last year.
It was so fun. We had such a great time. I did everything I could. I begged, I cajoled, I offered, you know, snacks.
Yes.
But it's just, the schedule.
Well, we couldn't time it. We couldn't time it out this year is because it's so close to the travel we're doing for the Wet Hot Bad Magic. It's like right on top of that. So that makes it difficult to. Pull off.
When I finally do my shows in the Pacific Northwest, if we can tempt Forrest out of his treetop enclave where he keeps himself, if we just like literally, it's almost like you have to like leave a trail of Reese's Pieces, like E.T. and maybe we can tempt him into an urban environment where he can appear at a show. But again, I can't. Yes. I cannot speak for Forrest. I don't know.
But I think that's a possibility. I've been all over this country, very well traveled. And most of the lower 48, but I've never been to the PNW. Even my wife has been numerous times.
Really?
But I've never been, so I'd love to go. And that would be the perfect excuse to get out there whenever that happens. But and then Charlotte, I'm adjacent to Charlotte as well. And yeah, so she went up there for Portlandia a couple of times.
Charlotte I love, but yeah, Portland I love, Seattle I love. And I got to go to. It's funny I didn't know she worked on Portlandia, but we were there when it was filming because that's when Grimm was filming, and we were like the two shows.
She just did some guest things. They had her, Kreitzel, who was directing it, had her on a few times. I'm in an episode of Portlandia actually with her, but that was shot in L.A. Yeah, that's a little bit of Scott trivia, but yeah, I'm like on a couch as an agent. I'm freaking horrible. Nobody should cast me in anything.
I'm going to go look this. Everyone, go find.
It's called, I think it's the episode something about around the world in 80 breakfasts or something. There's this idea that they're visiting all these restaurants and having breakfast, and there's some meeting in a studio office, and I'm in there on the couch with my wife, Emily's in that scene too. But that was shot in L.A. though.
I'm doing that immediately.
It's hard to find. I don't think it airs because it was a special and it's super long. So it's like you have to find it on YouTube or streaming somewhere or something like that. So,
all right.
Around the world in 80 plates. That might be what it is. Or is that something? Or is that like a Bourdain thing? I can't remember.
But anyway. Does it show up on your IMDb?
I don't know if I'm credited by name. I don't think so. I don't think it's on my IMDb. No. Hmm. I think the only thing that's on my IMDb was like the one movie I worked on that I was a set PA or an office PA.
What House about Wine Cards. Country?
Not the one. Yeah, I don't think I'm credited in Wine Country. Hopefully not.
Come on. It's like jumping off the couch when they see you. It's like, oh my God. Yeah.
I really thought that was the launch of my career. So I don't know what happened, but I'll be in my trailer, I guess.
It was a highlight. It was a highlight.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, man. Well, look, you know where to find me. Okay.
Yes.
So once again, let's just go through it again, because God forbid my listeners don't get it. September 13th, Sunday night, Toronto, Canada, Stormcrow Manor. The very next night, September 14th, Monday night, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Padraig's Brewing. The very next night, September 15th. Oh my God. Just saying the very next night, I can feel Susan's hatred and anger just growing. Okay. Tuesday night, September 15th, Chicago, Illinois, Red Lion Pub, haunted AF. The next night, Cleveland, Ohio, the B-Side Liquor Lounge. And I'm so proud to be performing somewhere with the word liquor in the title.
There you go.
it's not a liquor store. It's a liquor lounge. Right. All
yeah,
right.
It sounds amazing.
My two favorite things to do, liquor and lounge. and then Saturday night, Saturday, the 19th, Point Pleasant, West Virginia, for sure. Mothman Festival. We'll be there on Saturday and we'll be there Sunday too at the booth. So, I'll be performing like all day Saturday. I do a free talk, in the afternoon. And then I'll do the show that night. So yeah, lots 1 week, 6-7 shows. It's going to be brutal. Wish me luck. Wish Susan luck. And yes, and come see us.
Yeah, there you go. I think people should go for sure. I wish I could come. So I'm excited for you.
All right. Well, we'll work something out. We'll get our routine going. All right.
Okay.
Scott, it's been so great to have you. Anything else you want to let us know going on?
No, I mean, I think I've covered just about everything. And I'm glad we got to the bottom of the Abbott and Costello rift. And I think we're good.
They're okay. Now, Martin and Lewis, that's a full episode. Okay. I can't even get into it. All right. That'll be later. All right. Yes. Everyone, I will see you on the road.
Richard Haddam's Paranormal Bookshelf is presented by Astonishing Legends, 134 West, and Summerland Entertainment. Executive producers Scott Philbrook, Forrest Burgess, and Susan Lambert. Our associate producers are Tess Feifel, Sailor Franklin, and Harrison Marks. Our sound designer, editor, and engineer is Kevin Ducey. Artwork is by Tommy Beaver, our website is by Kayla Lord, and our music, as always, is by Nima Kazaruni. Until next time, be safe and be well, find the light in the dark, and we'll see you again soon.